You're listening to Face Off, episode 39, recorded October 11th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, Mark, we're back for another week of our famous podcast.
Awesome
podcast. Infamous podcast. Infamous. Hey, I got a question. Oh, actually, I mean, I got a little story to tell you.
Okay.
And I was at the bar the other night, you know, me at the bar, and 8 Bites walk in, and they go up to the bartender, and he asks, "Can I get you guys anything?" You know what they said? "Make us a double." Wow.
I like that one. That was cute.
I think we're going to stop the whole joke every episode thing because they're just getting worse each time. You'd be surprised how many jokes there are out there, though, about how programmers apparently can't get women, which I think is changing in today's world because programmers, you know, a lot of them are making a lot of money on the web. So,
all right.
Yeah, let's move on.
Moving on.
Our first web app that we want to talk about, we've got news and follow-ups this week. So the first web app we want to talk about is called 5secondtest.com. And what this website lets you do is it lets you create and take super quick usability tests. So what you do is you upload like an image or a screenshot or something. And there's two types of tests. There's the classic test and there's the click test. And then you like say whether or not you want random people to be able to take your test for you. And so what it does is like the classic test is it shows you the image for 5 seconds. And then you have to write down the 5 things that you remember from it in those 5 seconds. The click test is that within, you know, the first 5 seconds it shows the image, you have to click on the things that stand out. And then you kind of explain each item why it stands out for you.
I mean, I tried it. It was really cool. It's not like you have to go write a story about it, you know, a site or anything. You just click what you see in the first 5 seconds. It's really easy.
Yeah, the whole
to
point
do.
Of it is it's got a really low cost of doing it, both taking them and giving them to people. So like the whole point they joke is it's, you know, make a designer happy by taking a random test for them. And it's great because you do. It's really quick. It's really simple. It's not hard. You can just sit and, you know, I sat and took, you know, 20 tests in 5 minutes, I think, you know, and think about it, that's 20 people that got a little chunk of free feedback that'll help them. And so the whole point is that if you're going to upload these images for yourself, then, you know, you're going to give back to the community and it'll give back to you.
Yeah. We talked about it in a previous episode. It doesn't take very many tests before you kind of figure out what design is better. And I know, I don't think we've talked about it on the show, a particular app like this, but we've looked at many of these web apps for designers and where you have to kind of upload your thing and your PSD or whatever and have people review it. We were kind of skeptical about them. This one's really easy to do.
I like this one because it's short and sweet. It's really quick. You know, a lot of times people don't want to help people out because they don't have much time. But, you know, it's also a great way to get some inspiration. Let's say if you're, you know, creatively stuck, you know, go take some random tests for people and maybe you'll get a good idea that will help your design that you're working on right now.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a test right now just to show you how easy this is. 5 seconds. Oh, we pod. Interesting. So I'm going to click around. And
great.
There, done.
Done. There you go. And there's some guy getting, you know, valuable feedback about his design from you. It's kind of confusing at first, though, with the click ones, because, like, I didn't know when I was supposed to actually click. And, I submitted a lot of empty tests because I didn't know what was going on.
Well, there's a feedback tab on the side, so you could say, hey,
I could
add an indicator showing when it's time to start clicking.
But it's funny what you'll see here. I've seen full website designs. I've seen just a product. Like there was one, it was just a blue shirt, you know, a blue women's shirt. And I gave them, you know, honest feedback on that blue shirt, what I saw at first. So it was good. It's great. It's quick. It's simple. And it's fun. It's kind of fun to play around and see what other people are doing. I found it a lot more fun than I thought it would be.
Hmm.
So check it out, 5secondtest.com.
So another way to get some feedback is concept feedback.
Yeah.
What's this?
5-second feedback is really designed at quick, you know, first second, first impression type feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Concept feedback is a system. It's very similar to like Stack Overflow or any of those websites where you get reputation for helping people. What you do here is you critique people's designs more detailed than the 5-second test. But the whole point is that, you know, the more people you help, the more sort of reputation you get, which will help you get better feedback on your stuff. Mm-hmm. Again, all these sites, the whole point of these is it's free feedback. You know, you don't pay for it. You give some and you'll get some back. You know, you shouldn't abuse these sort of places. But so concept feedback, you go in and you give kind of like the first sentence, like your first idea. If I could change one thing about this design, what would it be? Boom. You know, then rate it, you know, 0 to 5 stars, and then, you know, give them a little more detailed feedback about it. And based on how good your feedback is, you'll get more reputation points. People can say whether or not they like your feedback to someone, you know, like whether or not you're accurate. Like, let's say if I just go on and be like, this design sucks, next. You know, that's going to get marked down. I'm not going to get reputation, but my karma is going to go down. So you're
going to get some quality critiquing going on here.
Yeah, and I think the whole point is the more sort of karma, the more you help out on the website, the more your stuff will show up for people to get random reviews.
So do I have to, you know, review a couple sites before I can put my own up? Or do
no,
you get
I mean,
one
you can
freebie?
Put yours. Yeah, I think, right? Let me look here. I can't remember. I mean, the whole point I thought was that obviously the more you help, the more feedback you'll get.
Yeah, the better reputation you're going to have, and
mm-hmm.
both as a designer and a critiquer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that they won't give someone who has really high reputation points, they won't give me their thing to review because I don't really have much. You know, you don't want a bunch of no-names reviewing your stuff if you're a really active member of the community.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, the whole point is that you can put up, you know, I think as many as you want. I can't see any limits, but I think yours will show up more in random feedback the more good feedback you give back to people.
Huh.
So even if your feedback is negative, you can give good negative feedback. You know, mm-hmm. people could say, well, this is, you know, this guy is accurate. He did good. And the whole point is the community will work together to let better people get together on stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so like the what's cool is there wasn't any when I looked at it, but there is a category where you can see unreviewed concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So like that for me, like that's a great way to start up, right? These people have concepts that are completely unreviewed. I want to check them and give feedback on them.
So this is kind of like unanswered questions on Stack Overflow.
Absolutely. Like just like it's a very similar system to Stack Overflow, but it's a good way to check your design. Like I looked at one guy's design. He had a really cool background, I thought, but then his banner had the same background, this sort of leaf texture. And it really didn't make enough separation. I told him, I was like, well, I really like the, you know, the texture of these fern leaves on the background. You know, it looks really great, paints a very vivid picture. But the fact that your banner has the same texture doesn't create very much separation. I don't know where your banner begins and where your background starts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was really good feedback. But it was also really cool to see this bright sort of green, very rich, very natural design. It was very inspirational to me. I got ideas for feedback or for designs on website that I was working on.
Yeah.
So it's really good. These are two really good ways to get feedback. One is more detailed. You'll get better feedback with concept feedback, but you also have to give really good feedback that takes time as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, you know, you can use 5-second tests if you want to just get really quick, you know, first, second, first glance, thoughts on your stuff from people.
It's got like a rating system, how many 2.5 out of 5 stars or 6 stars, I like that.
Yeah.
It's very easy to use, looks very clean, nice.
It's very cute, very, very easy to use. I like it. I'm going to, you know, I mean, there's been times where you've been working on design and you've sent me the link to it and said, you know, what do you think? Well, this is, you know, again, make sure you're not uploading anything that could potentially, you know what I mean, that it might be private or sensitive that your company doesn't want to announce yet. You know, be careful.
That's a good point you bring up. The other one kind of seems like it's for a site that's already live, maybe. Is this can I do a site that's already live and say, what do you think of this? Should I make some changes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you could do both for either.
Do you upload an image or can you just kind of do a URL?
Image.
And
it's always an image. You got to do a screenshot or yeah.
And same with the 5-second test?
Yep.
Okay.
Both of them. They're just images. So there's no... I mean, it makes sense. You don't want feedback on a website that may have changed, you know.
True.
MarkSandberg.net 5 years ago might be different than now.
Yes, yeah. So, if you make a little change and then it's,
exactly.
Different reviews based on
all of a sudden,
your
reviews just keep getting better and better because you keep fixing everything that everyone says to, you know.
So. That makes sense.
But check them out. They're two great web apps to get some quick, simple feedback that I really like. So
there's no excuse now to not get, like, user input about your sites. And you only need, you know, maybe a dozen or so. and you can have a better design, better user interface for navigation and everything.
You don't have to pay money for it. All you have to do is pay time. Just give back. I mean, don't be a leech on these systems, because they won't work if people are.
Right.
You know, concept feedback is better about making sure there is a built-in feedback mechanism, but 5-second test really doesn't. It's just kind of, you know, it's very much sort of the Twitter of these two. It's very shoot from the hip fast.
Yeah, do well, especially the 5-second one. Do like 20 of them before you do your
own. Super fun. They're fun anyways. Those are kind of fun, and they're really enlightening sometimes, because you're like, these are the things that stood out to me. But you wouldn't think they would, right? You're like, sometimes when you get done with something, after you looked at something for 5 seconds, you go, what really was the message of that? And I don't even know. There's one, it had 5 logos on it. It was a really good 5-second feedback. It had 5 logos, and it said, what are the 5 things you remember? Mm-hmm. And I could only really remember 1 logo. It was really cool, and it really, I focused on it completely. Yeah. Very cool.
All right, well, that does it for our web apps. If you have any web apps you'd like to send in, go ahead and go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can give us a call at 31Web2Tech. Let us know some of the web apps you're using. We'd like to know and share them on the show for anybody else to see.
Or any news or follow-ups. If you have, you know, if there's some news for a product that we talked about in the past that we don't know about, let us know. All right. Our topic this week is our old friend, the web do's and don'ts. So what should we do, Mark? Do you want to do the do's or the don'ts first?
Let's start with the negative stuff.
Okay, the don'ts. The first one, these are, again, at webdoesanddonts.com. We're just going to do the newest ones. The first don't is don't add reset buttons in forms. I think it seems intuitive. I think most people never use them.
I guess it depends.
You hit back or navigate somewhere else if you want to reset the form. Who fills a form with a bunch of wrong information and goes, oh, that's all wrong, I need to refill it all?
True.
it makes almost no sense.
Yeah. I bet there's some, I don't know, maybe if you're doing data entry and you've got a bunch of fields or something.
Dude, even then, what if you accidentally click on the reset button and all your data entry is gone?
True. Well, you could easily add a pop-up that says, are you sure?
Maybe, but that's still, annoy them. I think it is way too much of a risk. I would say, I agree with this don't.
Just get rid of them.
Get rid of them. Yeah. We don't want them. The next don't is make sure you avoid CSS expressions, which are apparently like a, you can insert JavaScript into your CSS. It's supported since like Internet Explorer 5, but...
Yeah, I mean, the article that they point to at Yahoo, which is high performance websites, they're just like, you know, this makes sites very sluggish and some browsers don't support it.
It's exactly. Plus, think about it. I think I would think that it probably can't cache your CSS then. And I mean, why wouldn't you just do that in JavaScript in your page anyways? If you really want to change the background color on the hour, then, you know, it loads the cached CSS web page, and you could just, let's say you have an ID for each, you're a class for each one, like white background, yellow background, then you just say change the background class to this, and it's much easier.
I personally have never found a reason to ever use these. So
I've never used nor heard of them, so that's definitely a don't. I'm going to avoid the heck out of those puppies, and I've already done so for the past X number of years. The next, this is going to be an interesting discussion. The next don't, it says, don't allow CSS caching, and I disagree with this completely 100%. It says, when updating the HTML and CSS in your site, CSS files can get cached. This can cause your site to break if users are served the new HTML but not the new CSS. You can avoid this by adding a variable to the end of the CSS. This, I think you need to cache your CSS.
I think so, too. I think it's an excuse saying you've got new HTML but not new CSS. That's an excuse on the developer's part not updating, either changing the name of the CSS or, you know, which Rails does for you. It's got a number assigned to your CSS.
Yeah.
It doesn't have like a variable. It's not changing all the time. It's only whenever you publish.
Yeah.
Also, there's... HTAccess, you can like set the time when it expires and things.
I would set it to a reasonable caching timeout, but at the same time, it just having it not cache all the time because it may change. I mean, I think the sign of a good CSS file, let's say, you know, like you break it up to multiple files, let's say even, but the, you know, a person who's doing good CSS should have good generic stuff that fits all over their website, and it shouldn't be changing very often, right? Why do you need to change it that much?
Yeah, I mean, why not have just like you know, CSS style version 1, style version 2.css. And well, one way of doing this is to turn caching on forever and not let the browser not cache it, and then you change the name of it so it thinks it's a new file.
Well, you mean when cache it, turn caching on forever.
Yeah.
Turn cache, so the browser is always saving the file. Maybe.
And then if you do make a change to the CSS, you change the name of it, and then that way it's... The...
Again, though, when are you changing your CSS that much?
Well, you're not.
I don't think you should be. I mean, I think you should be doing redesigns often, but by then, you know, your user's cache should be worked out, I would think. I don't know. I think that this is one of those things... Like you said, if you're really, really concerned about it, you can come up with a good system like renaming your CSS file with every new version every time you change it.
So I kind of spoke about the Rails thing, and I'm not totally certain on that, so I want to clarify. I just looked at my source on one of my sites that is in Rails, and it does say style.css ? And a, you know, mm-hmm. a big number.
Yeah, I actually wrote a jrobbins.com article on this, how like if you... Or was it an article? It was something. No, it was just a gist on GitHub.
Okay.
It's the same thing. Like you can call an image if you don't want the image to cache. You call, but it has the same file name. Like mm-hmm. this avatar was the example I used. Mm-hmm. You can add sort of the a query string and then like the timestamp, and it will not cache it every time. It'll
right.
consider it a new request.
I think this one's still getting cached. It's just that it's a a Git parameter of a number.
No, that prevents the caching.
Oh, this because it's a request. Not getting cached every time. Okay.
Yeah, I know. At least in Firefox and Internet Explorer, it works.
So maybe in Rails, then you have to turn it on, and it's not. It's specifically not caching it on, by default.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. But
I'm definitely getting a style.css ?
Yeah, I've noticed that on some Rails sites, but also maybe it increments that call every time you restart the server or something. Yeah. So who knows?
It still could be caching, I think.
It could be, yeah. Well, if each change. Time request, yeah, refresh and see if that get variable is the same.
Okay, so the number right now is, we'll just say it ends in 847. I'll do a refresh. And it is still 847.
Okay, so it must be like when you restart the server, it redoes those for you or something.
Which that's what you want.
That's good. Yeah, exactly. If I restart the server, that probably means I made a change to the code or anything else. I want all those caches to get reset.
Exactly.
So
I would say cache in general, but if you make a change, then make sure that
you do something that can
that
allows the cache to expire.
Yep,
definitely. The next don't. Ooh, I told you that'd be a good one. We were on the ball. Don't use H1 for site title exclusively. You know about this more than I. It's more of an SEO thing, right?
H1. Well, obviously the title of the webpage is very, very important to mm-hmm. Google. They weight it very heavily. H1 is probably the second, after that. Obviously, keywords in a domain are very important, then the title, and then H1s are very heavy, mm-hmm. heavily weighted. And so oftentimes people will put the H1 text as the same as the title to try to, up it a little bit. I would say your H1, you should use H1s and have some great keywords in them, but use them as like they are a header, what this page is about. Not mm-hmm. just don't use the exact same text that you have in your H1 and your title, because that doesn't really provide any.
What about
benefits.
If you have more? Should there is it like sort of a canonical thing that there should only be one H1 on
yes,
the webpage?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
you should only have
so
one
like
H1.
If I have H1 for my site title and H1 for my article title,
don't,
I shouldn't do
no,
that.
No. Nope.
Okay, so on subsequent pages, I want like an H2 for my web page title and then H1 for my blog article title.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Yeah, that makes sense. Totally.
I guess what they're saying is don't always have, like for a blog is a great example. Your article title should be the H1, not your blog's name. Because the article title is more important for the search engine.
On that page, yeah.
On that particular page.
Yeah. On my home page where I'm listing all my articles, the page should be H1.
Then it should be H1.
And all the articles should be H2s.
Yep. Okay. I mean, it requires a little bit of WordPress hacking a little bit and some stuff, but that is the best way to do it.
That makes sense.
So.
The next one is the next don't, and our last don't, and then we get on to the do's, which are always more fun. Don't put block elements inside inline elements. I'm not sure why the problem is, but just sort of conventional, according to the convention, you should never put a block element inside an inline.
starts breaking stuff.
Yeah.
I think across certain browsers and things. And if you
actually, you're right. Yeah, because inline elements, like I've done this before where I've done it, slap on the wrist sort of thing. And what happens is like the block element comes outside of the inline element sometimes. On some browsers, it gets really goofy.
Yeah, I mean, one browser might, you know, be lenient towards this, you know, quote-unquote mistake, you know, but some other browser might be very strict and say, you know, I'm not going to put it in there.
Breaking it.
All of a sudden, your page looks different across different browsers. And it's just a headache you want to avoid.
I agree. All right, let's get on to the do's. The first do is to remember to make a 404 page. And we've
been hammering on this one. Do this.
Yeah, make a 404 page. Make it useful. Make it fun. You know, if someone, you know, don't make it boring. Make it kind of, you know, cute. Like StumblePon's a great one. Twitter's a good one. You get to it and you're like, you don't feel so bad that you didn't get to where you were. I mean, you still wish you would have got there, but, you know, make it useful. Make it do a search automatically for you.
Yeah, I mean, Google even has like a custom error 404 thing that you can put in there that they'll provide a few search results based on the query or the URL string.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
There's no real excuse not to do it. Just do it.
Yeah, and it will really help your users a lot. So
the next one is optimize title tags. This is kind of an SEO thing. You know, like if your blog, for example, a blog is a good example in that, you know, you have a blog name. Some people could put the blog name across every article and everything, but it's probably more important to have the article title in the page title.
Yeah. Absolutely. I used to kind of argue about this, and you said it was better for SEO, but I said I think it was better to go the other way for users until I started searching. One day I was searching for Montana Fragfest stuff, and I noticed that like when I went to my site and did a search, everything came up with Montana Fragfest at the beginning, not the article title, which is what I really cared about.
Yeah. If like, you're searching for like how to, you know, beat a heavy as a scout or whatever, and you're going through there and you see Montana stuff, you're just kind of skimming through, you might miss it because that's not what you're searching for.
Yeah, exactly. Because especially because like Google cuts off the titles in the search, all you would see is Montana Fragfest dash how to be.
And yeah.
Yeah. And but if you saw how to beat a heavy as a, you know, and then, okay, well, then once you go to the website, then you're like, oh, this is Montana Fragfest. Yeah, I am a convert in this community on that one.
Yeah, I mean, also, not only for so that people can find you in the search results, but also so Google can put you in the search results because the keywords are weighted heavily if they're towards the beginning.
Absolutely. Google's amazing.
The next one is group form controls by using field set and legend elements. What this is if you ever notice on especially complicated forms, you'll have the little box around certain areas, like maybe the ship to or the billing address versus the ship to address. They'll have a box around that kind of saying this is these fields are part of a set.
That is the field set. And then the legend is the text title embedded in the field set. Yeah. Yep. Not only do, you know, I supposedly this has some sort of like programming difference or something, but really what it does is help break it up visually to the user.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are some programming benefits to it in the back end, but for the most part, it just really helps your users.
Yeah. I mean, you could do some JavaScript stuff or CSS where you can say this field set, make the form elements bigger or smaller based on this field.
Make
set
the field
name.
Set border red if they didn't fill out an item in that field set.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, the next thing we want to talk about is called consider using diagnostic styling. And the link here, it sends you to what this is a style sheet that has things that you're doing wrong in it, and it makes them highlight themselves, like tags that don't exist, like the B tag. Let's say if you're using the B tag, you should be using strong. Well, it probably takes anything that's in a B tag and makes it big and red. Like,
big and red,
hey,
say, hey, change this.
Hey, stupid, don't use this. That's great. I had no idea those existed.
You might not want to have it applied in a production server
environment,
just in case you accidentally had something goofy going on. But
it's a really quick and dirty way while you're developing to notice things you're doing wrong that you shouldn't do and you know, correct them quickly.
Yeah, what a great idea. And this is actually from Eric Meyer. I noticed we've mentioned him before as somebody to maybe follow on Twitter or something. He's a
smart
good resource for CSS. And
absolutely,
things.
Absolutely. All right, our last do that we want to talk about is do make your URLs user-friendly. This is really important.
A lot of the frameworks are making it easier and easier to do this. They're starting to, I mean, everyone's kind of recognizing that the user should not really be exposed to all these question marks and these huge hash token things and absolutely. All this crazy stuff.
Absolutely.
It should be kind of hidden from the user. They shouldn't have to see that.
But you do need to be careful. It's important. First of all, it's important for SEO.
True.
We talked about that. It reinforces the content of the web page. But it also is more friendly to use. But also we're seeing that a lot of these, because of this, it's getting so long that URL shorteners have become very prevalent. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do try to make it. Don't jam-pack with a, five-page long URL just to jam-pack it with enough content in it. I mean, don't put your entire content in the title. But at the same time, make it useful for friends. Don't have question marks and ID numbers and a bunch of garbly gook that people can't understand.
Yep.
That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to tell our listeners that if you want to subscribe to the show, you can go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. Or if you want us to, if you have some follow-ups or you have a web app that we want to look at or just an idea that you want us to talk about on the show or any sort of feedback, we love it all. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know. And thanks, guys. We will talk to you guys next week.
See you next week.